Flashes of my father's life, before the mountain consumed and upended all of our lives. Who he was, what he did, throb like a strobe light. I knew that he once worked on Wall Street, and that when I was around 5, our family moved from a modest home in New Providence to a 10-acre lot next to the Great Swamp National Wildlife Refuge in Harding Township, New Jersey. My mother helped design the sprawling house they built there. The result of my father's successful mutual fund brokerage business, Mayflower Securities. Years later, when Vanity Fair profiled him for allegedly swindling the U.S. ambassador to France in a real estate deal that went south, they referred to him as a rural schemer and a minor legend on Wall Street. He took offense to both labels. Rural, he said. Minor. The house in Harding was large enough to accommodate his desire for a large family. It was also an outlet for my father's appetite for movement and activity, broadcasting his distaste for sedentary loafing. He erected a gymnasium with an indoor basketball court. We had a pool and a tennis court, the latter of which was lit so he could play at night, striking balls with Bruce Lee-like groans. Kia! Ay-ya! There was enough land for impromptu baseball, football, and soccer games, and enough trees to get away with hiding Playboy magazines in hollow trunks. The dead-end road let us zip around on go-karts and dirt bikes without fear of being smeared by incoming traffic. A pond held 2 beautiful ducks that paddled across its surface until my father skipped a large rock across the water and accidentally killed one. It was years before he confessed. He had met my mother, Gail, while she was out on a date with someone else. Relentless, he pursued her with the same single-minded determination that defined everything in his life. They were married while he was enlisted in the Marine Corps. When my mother was pregnant with their first child, he began selling Kirby vacuum cleaners door to door. He would barge into homes, launching into his sales patter and demonstrating how easy it was to assemble the cleaner. It was not easy at all without practice, as customers soon found out. Emboldened by his success, he started selling mutual funds on the belief that if he could sell vacuums, he could sell anything. When he realized he was better at the stock market than his boss, he decided to go into business for himself. His staff ballooned, filling up multiple offices in New York and New Jersey. The secret to his success, he said, was motivating his salesmen by stoking their egos. There were lavish parties with 900-pound ice sculptures and car giveaways, trips and flowing booze, competitions and trophies. Once he gave a 6-foot award to a salesman less than 5 feet tall, the gathering erupting in laughter as the man tried to drag it back to his seat. One of the stockbrokers, Joe Stone, came over for dinner one night. My father took the kids aside, a brood 6 strong that he often made march with military precision for guests. We had to salute him when we were done. "You have to call him the great Joe Stone," he said. "What?" said my younger brother Jimmy. "The great Joe Stone," my father said. "The great Joe Stone," I said, happy to help. "No," he snapped. "A pause. The great Joe Stone." We did as we were told. Joe Stone beamed the entire night. My father was strict about schoolwork and chores. The Marine Corps instilled in him a love of militant structure. He wore a buzz cut for most of my early childhood, letting his hair grow out only when the culture of the 70s demanded it. But, somehow, a mischievousness coexisted with all of this, one that always seemed at odds with his demand for domestic order. Once, on a family trip to Colorado, he visited a friend who raised organic, grass-fed lamb. We brought home metal suitcases full of frozen raw meat, our clothes shunted off to the side, the meat's juices beginning to drip as it thawed on the drive back home. Our car smelled like a butcher shop for weeks. Another time, he came home late from work and scooped up my 2 sleeping older brothers, then just small boys, so he could take them to a carnival he had seen while driving. He barreled through things, rarely pausing to consider logistics. One February, he was playing a highly competitive game of tennis with a friend of his named Bob Brennan in New York City. With the score tied after 2 hours of play, the club closed. My father tried to persuade the staff to leave the lights on, but they refused. It was snowing, and no other indoor club was open. "What we'll do," my father told Bob, "is we'll go to Puerto Rico.